We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Got to the Fan Hotline is brought to you by Armstrong Business Solutions. Ed Bouchette going to join us. It's been a long time since Ed and I have talked. Mueller won't butt in today, Ed, because he's off.
Damn shame, Andrew. Damn shame.
Ed, do you get what I'm saying? I mean, your Red Sox just traded for a guy who's been great for a month and a half, and they gave up a bag of balls and a Carl Yastrzemski autographed baseball card. Nice trade.
Yeah, you know, I'm torn when it comes to that between trades and non-trades and giving and getting. And, you know, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. Last year was, you know, the perfect example.
Eovaldi was great for the Red Sox last year. I don't think they win a World Series without him.
Well, I'm old enough, Andrew, to remember when the Pirates traded for Bill Madlock.
Yep.
And that just put them over the top in 79. I covered that series and that team. And so it worked out for them. You know, they made a few other trades, Phil Garner being one of them. I think that was the year before. I can't remember now. But, last year's trade was horrible.
There's got to be some middle ground there, though. Just because you made one trade for a guy with 3.5 years left on his contract and had to pay a premium for it doesn't mean you do what your boy Mike Tomlin says and live in your fears and never make another trade.
No, you can't be gun-shy because one doesn't work out. Right. I mean, if you do that, you'd never make another trade. It's like drafting. Just because you draft Bud Dupree doesn't mean you don't draft another outside linebacker.
T.J. Watt.
With T.J. Watt.
There you go. So, I read your article about Tomlin, and I'm now wondering if you feel like all of the smart money is on him to get a contract extension in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I do. You know, I started thinking more and more about it, which is why I wrote that. I'm not sitting here saying they should. I just think they will, and for the reasons I gave. If you look at it objectively, and if you try and remove yourself from the Super Bowl, because really there's only been one team that has outdone them in the Super Bowl, with Super Bowl wins, and that's the New England Patriots, although the Giants did win two against the Patriots. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I mean, Tomlin's record stacks up, and, you know, they like him. They're not like some of these fans that are saying, what have you done for us lately? They like how he operates.
So they don't look at what's happened specifically, let's say, last year and think that season, even though the record wasn't awful, but just everything from last year didn't give the franchise and the coach a black eye?
Black eye's probably too strong. I mean, where was the black eye? Antonio Brown was basically it, wasn't it? I mean...
Well, I don't know. I mean, before that, they lost games. I mean, Antonio Brown didn't factor into the Raiders' loss or the Browns' tie.
Games. Every team has those games, Andrew. I mean, this side of the New England Patriots. People are still up in arms, and maybe rightfully so, that they lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars at home by 3 points, 45-42 in that playoff game. Jacksonville went to New England and almost pulled off the same thing, probably should have, against the great Patriots. That stuff happens. I think fans here look too closely and don't see the overall field of the NFL when they're looking at the Steelers.
Well, isn't the flip side of that Mike McCarthy? I mean, everything you've just said about Mike Tomlin, you could have said about McCarthy in Green Bay. Don't be so emotional. Don't be so prisoner of the moment and look at the big picture, and his playoff record and overall win percentage were great. And they still didn't the dynamic between the coach and the quarterback obviously had something to do with that.
That's a pretty big dynamic.
Oh, it is.
That's a big dynamic. And I was just going to mention that. You know, I mean, that doesn't – to a small extent, there was that between Bill Cowher and Ben Roethlisberger, you know. But that's not why Bill left. I don't know that you can have quarterback, the great quarterback, let's say, and the coach at war.
I'm happy that we got it on that topic with Cowher, because with everything you've written and said about this, what I'm struggling to understand is if they believed in doubling down on coaches after losing seasons like they did with Cowher after 99 and 2000, and said, nope, this is our coach, we'll get through the adversity, we're resilient, we believe in this guy, why didn't they believe in Cowher after winning a Super Bowl? Like, if there was ever a time to give a coach what he wanted, isn't it after you win the big one, Ed?
Andrew, there were other forces at work there. Bill and his wife went looking for property in North Carolina. They were going to buy some property. It was going to be their retirement home, you know, his after coach home. Instead, they found a house that Kay loved, and they bought it, and Kay moved the family there, basically. And Bill was left with trying to coach the team with his family down there and him flying back and forth. It wasn't working out. He had to choose, basically. The Steelers weren't going to let him continue to coach like that. He had to choose between basically family and football.
So he still wanted to be, Cowher still wanted to be the Steelers coach at that point, or did he?
He did, but he had little choice, really. Kay Cowher was a headstrong woman and did pretty much what she wanted to do, and she decided she's getting out of Pittsburgh and going home to North Carolina. And, Bill was here saying, well, I've got to choose my family or I got to choose football. And he was torn. He wanted to keep coaching. It just wasn't going to work like that.
Okay.
They didn't want him down there in, you know, February, March, April, when they're preparing for things, when they should be looking at free agency and him flying back and forth. That's not how they wanted it.
So it wasn't about money then. It was about him trying to be at two places at one time.
Yes. And him ultimately also realizing, I think, that he couldn't do it.
We're talking to Ed Bouchette, our Steelers insider here on The Fan. Ed, when you're trying to make up your mind on whether or not to give a coach more money in more years, you know, do you look at their entire body of work? If you were in charge, would you look at the last 5 years, the last 3 years? I mean, if you look at just Chuck Knoll's whole entire body of work, they would have never, I don't know, either tried to persuade him to retire or get out of coaching because he won 4 Super Bowls. So, like, how much... Like, where do you start the clock on what a coach is graded on or evaluated on, in your opinion?
Well, you brought up a good – I think it's a combination, really. You brought up a good example. Chuck Knoll built up so much capital with those 4 Super Bowls and those great teams. I started covering that team in 85, and they did not make the playoffs. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 90, 1, 7 of Chuck Knoll's – 6 of Chuck Knoll's last 7 years, they didn't make the playoffs. They went 5-11 in 1988. They were not a very good team. Any other coach, I think, even with the Steelers, would have been long gone. But those four Super Bowls carried Chuck. They really did. And, you know, they were going to keep him, actually. They made him change coaches after that 5-11 season in 88. He almost quit then, but then reluctantly agreed to make those changes, Tony Dungy being one of them. And then in 91, they wanted him to make more changes. Joe Walton was his coordinator. They wanted him out. Chuck finally went, you know what? It's time. I'm done.
Ed, what do you think in your time covering Mike Tomlin, what do you think in the last 10-plus years he's gotten better at as a head coach?
I think he's it's going to sound surprising. I don't know that he's as stubborn as he used to be. I think he really has done some things, especially with the coaching staff, that they kind of wanted him to do, Bruce Arians being one of them. And I really do believe, and, you know, people are probably going to, some people are going to laugh at this. I think he really has command of his team. The players like him. They respect him. You know, there's the Antonio Brown situation just skewered a lot of that. But I don't know that he's so much better as a game day coach, if you will. But I don't know that he's a bad game day coach. I think that's a, you know, his clock management, people just up in arms every time somebody brings up Tomlin as a good coach. People scream about clock management. I've been covering this every game that guy has coached, and I'm sorry, he's not that bad.
What is something that he needs to get better at for this season, Ed? Like, what's something, if they're going to make a jump here and make it back to being a contender, is there something you identify as an area where Mike Tomlin and his coaching staff need to get better for 2019?
Well, I think one of the, you know, the small changes, the challenges, that's not a big change, I don't think. I don't know if that's going to turn around a record. I don't know that he needs to change a whole lot, really, Andrew. And I think what you're going to see also is a little bit different philosophy with Antonio Brown gone, with Le'Veon Bell gone, even though he did it with James Conner. I don't think he's going to run the one guy all the time now. You're going to see them spread the ball around a whole lot more. They did a decent job of that anyway, other than the running back throwing the ball. But I think you're going to see more role players, if you will, rather than feeding the superstars.
Do you think they're going to really miss Munchak?
No, not this year, I don't think. I don't know what Sean, how, the new line coach, he's been here a while. I don't know what, you know, his strengths and weaknesses may be. But they have such a veteran line there, Andrew. His imprint is already on those guys, especially a guy like Villanueva, who he really turned into from nothing into a Pro Bowl left tackle, which is still an incredible story. And those guys are all veterans, except for Feeler. And, you know, he showed what he could do last year, replacing Marcus Gilbert for 11 starts.
When the Steelers go to New England in week one, who's going to call the shots on defense, Tomlin or Keith Butler?
That's a good question. I don't know that. I mean, we'll have to see that evolve. They've been kind of splitting the duties, and, you know, Tomlin calls what he wants to call, and, you know, I think that they'd be better off with one voice, and I think it should be Butler. I think Mike should just, go ahead and help with the game plan. Go ahead if you want, coach, you know, during the week, but I think you have to have one guy calling them, and I think it's led to confusion and late plays going in and all that stuff.
Do you think it's a clue that it might be more Tomlin this year with Butler taking over outside linebacker responsibilities?
That could be. I don't know kind of why they're doing that, but you know, Butler obviously was a linebackers coach before he became the defensive coordinator. Maybe he just didn't feel comfortable hiring another outside linebackers coach or couldn't find a good one to come here. I have no idea. But, you know, hey, I think there are too many coaches anyway. I mean, I come from when I started covering, Chuck Knoll was the head coach, the quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator, and the special teams coach. And I realize the game has evolved, but I don't know that Keith Butler can't be the defensive coordinator and coach the outside linebackers.
All right, Ed.
Basically, that's what the offensive coordinator, Randy, is doing, too.
Quarterbacks.
He's quarterback's coach, and even though he has an assistant there.
Cool. All right, Ed, good to talk to you again.
All right, Andrew, good to be with you again.
Thank you.
Next time I talk to you, they'll be getting ready to pack up and go to St. Vincent.
And then we'll hang out with each other there, except I won't stay overnight or any of that baloney.
Oh, I'm not staying overnight either anymore.
Oh, good. Congratulations on that.
I'll be going back and forth. I didn't stay much lately anyway, 3 or 4 nights.
Cool. All right, Ed.
All right, Andrew. Thanks.
Yep. Ed Bouchette, our Steelers insider. Joe Girardi's going to join me at 5 o'clock on the Pirates. Manage Francisco Cervelli in New York, so I'm interested in getting his thoughts on everything that went down with Cervelli last week into this week. Ramon Foster has put his opinions out there on this 18-game NFL schedule proposal. Give you some of those takes and give you mine too. Just wrapped up with Ed Bouchette, his article on Mike Tomlin. He gave 10 reasons why he thinks Tomlin should get a contract extension. He doesn't think it's really a hard one. That he doesn't really think it's a tough call. Pretty black and white in Ed's mind that Tomlin should get an extension. I vehemently disagree with that. Mike Tomlin received a contract extension, his last one, on August 4th, 2017. The Steelers put 2 extra years on it. Since that contract extension in August of 2017, the Steelers have won exactly 0 playoff games. 2 years since an extension, up for another extension this summer, no playoff wins. I'm sorry. When you've got Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, a great offensive line, you're using your first-round picks every year on defensive players, and you're a defensive coach, and you don't win a single playoff game since your last contract extension, you don't get another contract extension until you win a damn playoff game. And I don't want to hear about 13-3 2 years ago. Record doesn't matter. If you don't win in the postseason, the Patriots went 11-5 last year and lost to the Steelers. But they won the Super Bowl. Their regular season record means diddly squat. So am I still upset that they lost to the Jaguars? You're damn straight I am. And as far as Tomlin having control over this team, Antonio Brown quit. James Harrison quit. Le'Veon Bell got into a contract dispute. Martavis Bryant pretty much quit. Bud Dupree plays like a guy who might as well have quit. I don't see it. He's not a lame duck coach. There are 2 years left on Mike Tomlin's contract. If he doesn't get a contract extension now, he can't walk after the year. He can't pull a Barry Trotz. Wins a cup in Washington, isn't under contract, and says, the heck with you guys. You didn't believe in me. I'll go coach somewhere else next year. No, he'll still have another year on his deal. And if you've got to pay if you've got to overpay for Mike Tomlin because he rebounds this year, it takes the Steelers to the Super Bowl or wins the damn thing, okay. I think a multi... we're talking about an organization that is worth close to $1 billion. If they can't pay Mike Tomlin an extra $1 million or two because he has a huge 2019 season, well, then shame on them. I don't get the urgency at all. And I don't think, well, this is the way we've always done things is a good enough excuse or a good enough reason. Businesses have to evolve. Companies have to change. Business models evolve as time changes. So I don't see a good enough reason. 9-6-1 last year, I'm sorry, that's not going to cut it. You finish with the same number of wins as the Tennessee Titans. You don't get a raise for that if you're Mike Tomlin. You can follow me on Twitter at the Pony Express, Pony spelled P-O-N-I. You can follow us on Twitter at 93.7, the Fan, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Locations in North Huntington and the North Hills. Updated trade deadline stories. A pitcher goes on the disabled list. Two pitchers were acquired over the weekend. And so how does that pertain to, or how does that involve the Pirates? I'll tell you next. I'm Andrew Filippone. Chris Muller's off. It's the PM team on the Fan. Now let's get to the fun part of the show. Actually, that's been the whole thing because Muller's not here. Let's look at some Pirates starting pitchers ERA, shall we? Trevor Williams, 5.05 after the beating he took yesterday at Wrigley Field. Jordan Lyles, 5.16 after failing to make it out of the first inning on Saturday. Chris Archer, after his most dominant, impressive start of 2019, gave up some runs late. Chris Bryant home run. Still looking at a 5.42 ERA. Three-fifths of your rotation. Two guys you really thought you could rely on this year, Trevor Williams after his second half in 2018 and Archer after everything you gave up to get him. Two pitchers who are way below average. And so that is the Achilles heel of this team, is the rotation. I think the bullpen, still not great, but has stabilized a little bit. And they should get Kella back soon. Whereas the starting pitching has just been a mess. You can't blame it all on injury. You can't blame it all on Jameson Taillon. Taillon being out has nothing to do with the way Williams, Lyles, or Archer has pitched. And that's why I've said, and I'll continue to say, as long as the Pirates are in shouting distance, as long as they are still in it, and 5.5 games out in a division with 70 games to go, where the majority of your games are against the teams in your division, is still enough time. I don't think it'll happen, but it could happen. The Pirates hit like they did in June and the first week of July before the All-Star break. Their starting pitchers don't have to be perfect. You don't even need quality starts. But they need better. And so if Keller's not ready, at some point, Dario Agrizal is going to come back down to earth, you'd think. They need help. And I know starting pitching is the hardest thing to get. That's what I hear all the time. You know how expensive starting pitching is? You can't get Madison Bumgarner, too expensive. Who else is out there? And then two trades got made over the weekend for starting pitchers, warm bodies, guys that have a pulse. Veteran starting pitchers who have actually gotten major league hitters out in their last 5 to 10 starts. Got moved to contending teams. for absolutely nothing. Let's start with Andrew Cashner, who looks like Paul Bunyan, the Orioles starter. You might remember him from his San Diego Padres days. In Baltimore, one of the worst teams in baseball this year, Cashner, since June 1st, a 1.41 ERA, the best in baseball. 1.41 ERA, the best in the American League. Red Sox traded two minor leaguers to the Orioles. Go to MLB.com when the trade got made. Let me see where those guys are in the Red Sox farm system. Let's look at Major League Pipeline. Let's look at guys like Jonathan Mayo, who break down the minor leagues for a living. Let's see what they have to say about these two players the Orioles got back in the deal. Neither prospect was ranked in the Red Sox top 30. Top 30. And Boston's not exactly flush with prospects either. A pitcher that in his last seven starts has an ERA of 1.41. Got moved for two players who aren't even legitimate prospects. Homer Bailey. We talked about him on Thursday. I said the Pirates were interested, but they didn't really want to give up much to get him. And so the A's strike, Oakland. Second wild card in the American League right now. They trade for Homer Bailey, who I know, nothing great there. 1-14 last year, but a couple of years removed from Tommy John surgery and a major knee injury. Finding his rhythm in Kansas City, last seven starts, 3.49 ERA. Find me a Pirates starting pitcher that has posted anything close to that in the last month. You can't. The last 2 months, you can't. Royals get back from Oakland the A's 17th rated prospect, a guy who's hitting 235 right now in the minor leagues. So these pitchers were out there. They weren't expensive. It's not a Chris Archer nightmare come back to life where you freak out because you trade for a pitcher and you gave up a ton to get him. No, these are minor moves. They're moves that look like the Jay Happ trade and the Nova trade and the Burnett trade, where you were giving up practically nothing to acquire a major league pitcher. And so the Red Sox do it smartly, the same thing they did last year with Nathan Eovaldi, and he helped pitch him to a World Series. And the A's, who are pretty cutting edge and pretty smart, intend, I think, to make the right decisions because they're often competitive and their payroll usually mirrors the Pirates, and they're in a playoff spot. And I know I had people tell me last week, well, Homer Bailey sucks. Okay, well, we'll see what he does in Oakland. If the Pirates are languishing, they need help right now, and they're resting on their laurels. We'll see if Lyles gets another turn in the rotation. He shouldn't. We'll see how long. I mean, if Trevor Williams keeps pitching this way, then I think you'd have to put him in the bullpen too and give Luis Escobar a shot, or give Keller a shot. But those opportunities should be going to major league pitchers on teams that are selling. And as long as you're 5.5 games out, you should continue to consider yourself a team that needs to take advantage of a down division. Because I'm not convinced, just because the Cubs won 3 in a row, that they're ready to take off here and go win themselves 90 games. Because every Cubs winning streak this year has pretty much been followed by a losing streak right after. And they had lost 7 consecutive series up until this weekend. I'm not convinced that team has straightened it out because they got a chance to hit Trevor Williams fastballs that were right down the middle, and Jordan Lyles, who couldn't put the baseball anywhere he wanted to. He looked like a guy 15 beers deep trying to play darts on a Thursday night. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy in McMurray. Their first responder appreciation day is tomorrow. So check it out. High of 86, a low of 68. Here's what we got on tap for the rest of the show. Joe Girardi at 5, the former Yankees manager, used to manage Francisco Cervelli. His thoughts on the Pirates, the NL Central race, Cervelli's future at 5. I've got to host until 6:40. At 6, we'll talk to a Cardinals reporter from KMOX in St. Louis on this series. But coming up next, Ramon Foster, a host on 93.7 The Fan. He has his own show and a Steelers veteran. Also, the Steelers union rep on this 18-game proposal that was in the Wall Street Journal, made its way to Pro Football Talk. Roger Goodell was on CNBC talking about it over the weekend. 18 NFL games, but players can only play in 16 of them. Foster's take, and then I've got some thoughts too. I've already heard from fans on this, and I don't agree with a lot of them, so that should make for a good conversation in a few minutes. Jeff has the update at 4. He'll give you tonight's Pirates lineup. It's the PM team on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.